Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
From the Third Coast International Audio Festival and Chicago Public Radio, I'm Gwen Maxey, and this is ReSound.
Where are you?
Sound Lake, Yukon. On an island where I can see mountains and blue skies.
And what's the water like?
Well, it's very clear, but I would have to say a little cold.
What are you wearing?
Not a stitch.
And what's your next move?
I'm gonna dunk right in. Right in, like dive like a mermaid.
ReSound is a remix of music, documentaries, found sounds, sound bites, and tidbits we find all over the world. We're sort of like oral archaeologists, unearthing sound from any site we find. The airwaves, the internet, audio festivals, our own Third Coast competition, you name it, we're there listening. Big Brother meets great radio.
I think I should do it all at once. Do you think I should go in this bucket?
I don't know. What would you generally do?
Jump right in. I'm gonna jump under the wave. One. Two. Three.
Ah! Oh, it feels good. Woo! You should come in.
The only time I've been away from a body of water was in college, and I ended up dropping out. No coincidence there. I felt like I was missing a limb. Lake Michigan, that vast, roaring, twinkling ocean of a lake, was so much part of growing up in Chicago, I actually think of it as a character in the play that is my life. A lover, maybe. A relative. Maybe even my favorite relative. Like a sister, full of solace, comfort, raging power, and peace. Without it, I feel unmoored, in mourning, incomplete. So I try never to stray too far away, despite the sub-zero temperatures, the want for a hill anywhere within 100 miles, and all the other indignities the city has to offer. My anchor is here, where an anchor should be, in the water. Today on ReSound, water, water, everywhere. In Toronto, there's a floating eatery on the edge of Lake Ontario called Captain John's Seafood Restaurant. But at its bow, the boat still bears its original name, Yadrin, and on its chimney, the Yugoslav Red Star. For producer Mladen Novaja, who came to Canada in 1972 from Sarajevo, it's a dream boat, remembered from his childhood. A luxury liner that once sailed as the pride of the Adriatic Sea. Then it seemed huge. Now it just seems so small.
My name is Mladen Avadia, and here in Toronto, I found a dream boat from my childhood. Its name is Yadran.
Okay. And the other two people.
In my country, former Yugoslavia, now Bosnia actually, in Sarajevo, I had been producing radio dramas and documentaries. In Canada, I've been working as a telephone interviewer, a coding clerk, a media librarian. I've been employed and unemployed, a student, depends. And now I am idle enough to pursue some bizarre things.
How is that? Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah, he's recording right now.
Onda kreni ovako, na sebi, ti ću tu pjevat, neću ja pjevat.
I ti ćeš pjevat, moramo, jebra, ti bolje pjevaš.
It's Davorin.
Jebote, ovo ja vučim, ajde ti mene še jedno to.
My friend.
Usamljeni mladi morna.
He's in Toronto now.
Nigdje nikog nema.
We tried to sing together.
Samo dragu na
daleku. Years ago, we used to work at Radio Sarajevo.
Aj, pusti mene sada.
Usamljeni mladi morna.
A lonely young sailor.
Nigdje nikog nema.
Has nobody.
Samo dragu na daleku.
Only his darling girl.
Koja
waits for him. Far away.
So it's the Yadran, and it's was used.
That's the name of the sea. In English, you say Adriatic, but in our country, they say Yadran.
So they named the boat after the sea.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, just to let everybody know,
if you go to Toronto Harbor, you can see a white ship with a big neon sign, Captain John's Seafood. But if you come closer, you can see the red star on its chimney. And on its bow, you can read its real name.
So we're turning right here, we're heading south towards the lake. So here you'll see to the right the water. You can actually get out to the ocean from the Great Lakes. Here you'll notice a big ocean liner called Captain John's. It was known as the Yadran. It used to cross the Adriatic Sea. And now it's a floating restaurant where you get primarily seafood.
Good evening. Welcome aboard. Reservation?
No, we're here for the, what is it?
Singles dance?
Yes.
Straight up. Enjoy your stay. Good evening.
For dinner, we don't have a reservation.
No problem. You have to have a drink in the lounge first. Then give me a few minutes for your table.
A floating restaurant?
Or you want to wait here? We're just getting some tables ready.
Is this the ship I knew?
Reservation? No reservation.
For two?
With the menu, you get a nicely illustrated Captain John's journal. It says, Ivan was born in the Yugoslavian province of Slovenia at a time when few opportunities existed for that nation's young people. So if he wanted to be successful, he'd have to make it somewhere other than his home.
Good afternoon, bonjour. Bonjour, good afternoon.
I still remember my summer vacation trips to the seacoast with my parents. We would take a narrow gauge train in Sarajevo and travel all night to arrive at dawn to the port of Ploče. Then, throngs of kids, moms, dads and grandparents would rush to the white limestone dock. There, we would all exhausted wait for hours for a boat to take us to Gradac, Zaostrog, Tučepi, or Makarska. It would be a small ship on a local line named after the writers we read at school, like Nazor, Njegoš, or Petar Zonarić. But Yadran was a different story. Yadran was untouchable. Alongside the other big ships, which were named after the ideals of our country, a partisan girl, partizanka, proletarian girl, proletarka, or unity, jedinstvo. Yadran sailed fast and far.
Now we're gonna go through the ship and I'm gonna show you some
Mr. Letnik bought MS Yadran in 1975 from the Yugoslav government. He was kind enough to give me a tour of the ship.
All six national customs in the banquet room here. You have all of them, Serbian, Macedonian, Croatian, Slovenian, Bosnia, and all the inlay carving, as you see downstairs and up here, that's all original.
On the walls you can see diplomas and letters of gratitude, pictures of Captain John with dignitaries, Toronto mayors.
So, here's Gianni Lombardi, Italian Chin Radio. He started the bikini contest on the boat here.
Beautiful girls, successful businessmen.
Here's Mel Asman. Here's Mayor of Mississauga, Hazel McCallion.
A story of individual entrepreneurship rewarded.
Now we're going to the open deck, up to the top level. All the lifeboats are still intact.
So here is the star on the chimney, but I remember it was red when I came here, like 8 years ago.
You know, sometimes they faint.
Aha, I see.
Like, now we're gonna have to repaint it again, because, you know, from the sun gets a lot of beatings and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's part of a history now.
Usamljeni mladi mornar, nigdje nikog nema, samo draguna daleku, koja mu je vjerna. Samo draguna daleku, koja mu je vjerna.
We were enchanted by the promise of the adventure and long cruise on Jadran. So waiting for a boat to take us to our summer resorts, we look at MS Jadran as a miracle. And a miracle it was. It would first appear on the horizon as a small smoking chimney. You'd hear its siren from afar. Soon, it would be in our face, docked right there, in front of us. Its shade would cover the sun. I looked at the huge white ship in awe and asked my father to take me on board. "It is not our ship," my father would explain. "It does not dock at small ports we are going to. Jadran goes from Dubrovnik to Split and further to Rijeka and then even to Venice, Italy."
Donc ceux qui sont avec moi montent ici.
Okay.
Et ceux qui sont avec Lucie, donc l'escalier.
Bonjour, good afternoon.
When you come to the boat, do you explain to these people what kind of boat is it?
What kind of boat, I don't know, but I know that the captain bring this boat from Yugoslavia.
Salut.
Bonjour.
Salut, bonjour. Savez-vous le nom de ce bateau?
Captain John.
Captain John. C'est le nom de restaurant, mais le nom de bateau.
No.
None of the French tourists at lunch knew the boat's real name.
Jadran. Est-ce que vous savez qu'est-ce que ça signifie, Jadran?
None knew what Jadran means.
Signifie Adriatique.
None had visited the Adriatic Sea.
La mer Adriatique?
No? No. No.
Paddy too.
Okay, merci beaucoup.
It's time to leave.
Au revoir, bon appétit.
What to do? Find a boat that sails somewhere.
Selling tickets for all these?
Just for these boats right here. That's one of our boats leaving. The other two boats are docked beside that.
So you can get ticket there?
Yeah.
Out on the Lake Ontario, I see Jadran squeezed between the downtown Toronto skyscrapers. and I can't believe how small it is. How something that once was so huge can turn into something so small now. When I started recording Jadran, I asked my cousin Jadranka, who lives in the port of Split, where the ship was built, to send me some information. And she wrote back, "Dear Mladen and family, your letter both cheered me up and saddened me. It pulled me back to the past times of Sarajevo stories and your unfortunate departure. About MS Jadran, except for a few facts that I'm sending you, there is no big story. It was one of these rare boats with no destiny. The only significant detail is that it crossed the Atlantic Ocean so long ago, although the small rubber boats are doing it now. It never got into shipwrecks. Nothing about it that could make the boat a story. But from what you have written to me, you have a story. Do I? I don't know."
Usamljeni mladi mora, nigdje nikog nema, sa Bodragu nadaleku, koja mu je vjerna, sa Bodragu nadaleku, koja mu je vjerna.
The Good Ship Jadran, produced by Mladen Novaja for Outfront on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Okay, ready? The shattered water made a misty din. Waves looked over others coming in. The water thought of doing something to the shore. The ocean thought of doing something to the shore that water never did to land.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Resound from the Third Coast Festival and Chicago Public Radio. I'm Gwen Maxey. We welcome all missives. SOS, LOL, you send it, we'll read it. All comments, questions, rants, and raves can be sent to Resound at thirdcoastfestival.org. Our friend Rob Rosenthal runs the radio program at the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies in Portland, Maine. And being so close to the ocean, he ends up spending a lot of time out in his kayak, sometimes with his microphone in hand, capturing the local sounds.
On a good day, I open the windows in my house and I hear the sound of bell buoys. They mark the channel in the harbor here in Portland, Maine. Clong, clong, clong. Even on bad weather days, snowy or rainy and drizzly, I stand in my backyard and I can listen to the chime of buoys. Now, I live about 2 miles from the water, and at this distance, the buoys sound, well, they sound kind of romantic, actually. And I think the two are connected, buoys and romance. It's like waves crashing on rocks or a lighthouse in a foghorn. The sound of a bell buoy kind of evokes romance with the sea. Or maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe it's just the soft, distant cooing sound of bells at a distance that gets my attention. And that's how we normally hear buoys. They're at a distance. And usually we just hear one buoy at a time. But as you'll hear on this recording, up close, bell buoy sounds are less than romantic. The coo is more like a clang, a clonk, and a scrape. And three buoys at once? Not very charming. In my kayak, I paddled out around Portland Harbor and recorded the three buoys that mark the channel. By recording them up close and then mixing the three together, I break down the barriers of time and distance, the ways that we normally hear buoys. This is Heard at Once, bell buoys.
Heard at Once, Buoy Bells, by Rob Rosenthal, director of the radio program at the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies in Portland, Maine. Now, as it happens, one of Rob's former students, and coincidentally, a former Third Coast assistant, is the producer of our next story. Callie Carswell went to Newcastle, Maine, to talk to residents about a very mysterious overnight disappearance.
I happened to be called by my fire chief. You know, I got there with a flashlight. It was kind of dark still, raining, and it was like, wow, I've never seen so much water come down through a place before. So I went back out the next morning to see what happened, and basically Sherman Lake disappeared overnight. It just flowed away. At that point, nothing we could do but, you know, kind of cry that it was gone. Wondering what was going to happen or how it was going to be put back together.
He goes out to get the New York Times early in the morning, and I was in here making coffee. And he walked in and he said, "Look out the window." And I impatiently said, "Why?" And he said, "You don't live on a lake anymore."
I think he called me and said, "The lake is gone,
and
the lake is gone."
Gone? What do you mean it's gone?
I just couldn't believe it.
Go?
Sherman Lake was gone.
And I just stood there in utter
I think
utter
it was total
amazement.
Amazement. It
just shocked, just absolutely shocked that it was gone.
It was almost like a whole time period was gone.
I just thought, wow, it's wow. I mean, that's pretty much all you can say when it's gone.
That man-made lake has been there 70 years.
It was called Sherman Lake, and one could see that it was a more or less a popular place.
It was really scenically beautiful, you know, absolutely beautiful.
It's, I think at the deepest point it was like 11 or 12 feet, but it was great for bass. We had bass and sunfish and perch and, you know, things
it's
you
a great place to kids because you could always
catch
a fish there.
It was easy, cheap recreation.
You'll see and, canoes, you know, and kayaks, and I know
in the
lots
fall,
of
duck hunting, goose hunting, ice fishing, of course. And
so it was an easy kind of lake, just a sort of locals kind of place.
And that's the way it was before the dam went out.
The dam at Sherman Lake failed on Columbus Day weekend. We had very heavy rain.
It was torrential rain.
It was a lot of water, more than most of us.
And the wind was just unbelievable.
And throughout the county, you had a lot of washed out roads. It wasn't a very fun week for anybody, really.
It was the old road bed that washed out.
The dam was actually the old Route 1.
And it just, you know, all gushed away downriver.
And things happened and changed, and that's all there is to it. They couldn't handle the power of nature is what happened to it.
When I saw it, it was all mud flat. Water had just absolutely disappeared.
All the people have disappeared. You know, there's no activity out here. Really none since the breach.
You know, you drive by some days, the tide is coming in, and there's a little bit more water in there. Then other days, there's nothing at all.
I think a lot of us thought that they were going to fix it.
I never dreamed the day that it was breached that it wouldn't be repaired.
A lot of us didn't realize what was in the air.
And then all the rumbling started.
The issue was whether we should rebuild the dam or not rebuild the dam.
There was a small group in the town of Newcastle that got together and expressed their dismay that the dam had blown out.
I was a lunatic in the beginning.
There was the other contingent of people that said, you know, originally it was a marsh. It wasn't a lake.
I mean, how can you quarrel with the fact that it's more natural than it was? Isn't more natural better?
The letters to the editor were prolific.
There were
articles
in
the
articles
local
in the paper
were abundant.
A few so letters to the editor.
We have an interesting population who's not afraid to give their opinion, that's for sure.
Someone started batting the ball around that it would cost $1 million to fix it. That
some people just aren't willing to pay more taxes.
It wasn't until the holidays and the potential Walmart that it fell out of the top topic in the local newspaper.
So it was the subject of a lot of debate, a lot of conversation back and forth.
I mean, this was the event of the town. It was the front page of the town report.
And ultimately, so our final decision was, no, we're not going to rebuild the dam. And in fact, we would like to complete the restoration there.
They figured Mother Nature took back what she wanted, and they were going to leave it that way at this point, I believe.
They said once upon a time people were making dams and making lakes, and that was great for recreation. But fortunately, the Department of Transportation is not in the dam business anymore.
Step away for a moment and just imagine if you brought lakefront property that you thought you'd built on one of the most beautiful places you'd ever seen in your life. You have 2 years on it and it's gone. We didn't feel like the luckiest people in the world, I'll tell you that.
I've lost the fishing. I can't take the kids there anymore.
So it's some history lost. And I wonder about what my dad would have been thinking if he was still alive and people who had lived here all their lives. Of course, most of the people that grew up here are now gone. This is a new generation around here, so they can adjust to it.
I was never that enthralled with Sherman Lake, and the world needs, the coast needs, Maine needs more tidal marshes. To me, it was sort of an ironic twist to history or something that lake that I looked at for so many years was once again a tidal marsh, and it was like somehow the hand of fate had put it back.
A lake is beautiful. A salt marsh is beautiful. They both have great things to offer. To me, the downfall of the lake is that it was a man-made lake. So I guess I like to think that, you know, we can flow with the change.
We've gone there so many years that, you know, it'll be a hole this summer. I'll miss it.
I'm sure people will get used to it in time, like anything happens, but it is, you know, I think it's a good loss to the town.
Like I said, it's been 6 months now, and I just kind of look at it and say, oh, it's not so bad. You know, I'll get used to it.
You know, over time, things have changed. It does it everywhere. It's a sign of progress, I guess they call it.
You know, you just change your coat or change your shirt or change your hat, continue on, because that's what's going to happen.
And I still have trouble picturing Sherman Lake in my mind now. It's as if the vision of that just left as quickly as the marsh began.
Runaway Lake was produced by Callie Carswell when she was a student at the Salt Center for Documentary Studies in Portland, Maine.
We don't appreciate how much this common, ordinary substance means to us. We're so used to it, we just take it for granted. But it helps grow the food we eat. It provides electricity and steam for power. We drink it. We skate on it.
and we swim in it. We make snowballs out of it. You know, it makes a person feel very, very grateful for water.
So our next story, Mirror, Mirror, isn't totally about water. Okay, so it isn't really about water at all. But there is a submarine in it. And it's all about reflections, and water reflects. So maybe it's a stretch, but it's cool, and we wanted you to hear it. It's by Nina Perry, a British sound artist who pays a lot of attention to sound design in her work. She composes most of her music and layers voices and field recordings into dense, cascading sonic wonderments. In fact, I think it's safe to say that this piece is more about the sound than the story. So just sit back and relax. Here's Mirror, Mirror.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. 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 Who's the fairest of them all?
What do I see? A middle age, a mid-50s lady with a lot of white hair, and not having had time to comb it, so it looks terrible this morning. And anyhow, it's uncombable.
I can see taste buds on my tongue. It's quite funny, really. The dead smile.
I think sometimes, like, your eyes can reflect how you feel. I don't know how, but it's just like I'm happy or something.
It's like you're always drawn to looking at somebody's eyes and then somebody's teeth as well. I really like light and bright things, and mirrors are always light and bright, really. So I'm always drawn to them. It's a white and a bright and a light thing.
Yes, there's this face looking at me, and whenever I look at the face, the eyes are following me. I can't catch that face out. There's no way I can at all move my head or glimpse. I can't look at the image without it looking absolutely back at me and staring me out. So there's no way I can deceive this at all. It's rather like trying to shake off your shadow. You know it's going to be quite impossible, and yet for some perverse reason I'm playing with this mirror and I'm just trying to lose it. And of course I can't.
When lift my mouth up, I can see little stretch marks on my chin. When I smile, I can see them. When I lift my eyebrows up, there's loads.
Every time I meet someone, I always look at their teeth, of course, because I'm quite interested in that. So some people like brightness, and I like brightness, and so I think that's why I look in the mirror, really.
I see time passing. I see the mess in this flat. I see the reflection of lots of painting and artwork that I love. But I see also order in disorder, the same that I see in myself. There's a lot of order. I can find anything I want, even if it looks messy, even if my hairs look wild. And this is what I see.
Ears are okay, eyes are regular, eyebrows are fine, nose is all right, beginning to look its age. Grey haired, clean shaven, not that I could grow a beard anyway, I've tried, it's the biggest waste of time going. Got all my own teeth, dimple, very important, strong family feature, I look happy, yes, and I'm not stressed. So I'm happy to stand here and look at me for a while. I'm Commander Jeff Tall, and I'm director of the Royal Navy Submarine Museum. I was a submariner for 28 years. I had the great privilege of commanding four of them, and I've been at the museum now for about 13 years. Before you left harbour, you made sure your periscope was perfect. And the top eyeball, if you can think of it as two eyeballs, you know, one at the top and one at the bottom,
was always cleaned with gin, because gin, it polishes the, you know, that top face to perfection. Prescott was a big lighter lady, and she loved her gin. Here we go, through the hatch. Can you smell it? I just love it. I have to come down here for my daily fix. It reminds me so much of old-fashioned submarining. It's a mixture of diesel, stale sweat, tinge of cabbage. Can you detect that? Or is it Brussels sprout? I can't quite tell the difference. Water was such a precious commodity that you didn't wash. The standard submariner's bath was to put an inch of water in a washing bowl, and in that he would clean his teeth. With that residue, he'd wash his face, just to, you know, possibly dab his armpits. And then with what is left, he'd wash one sock. And then they say repeat the process. So you only had to go on patrol with three socks. But you're now inside what is fundamentally a metal cigar. You know, and amongst all this mash machinery outside, there's an inch of steel. So we're encased. And at the front you can see torpedo tubes. And behind you, you've got a torpedo. It's delivering that torpedo, which is the submarine's job. So how did you do it? The main way of doing it, and particularly until the 50s, was through the periscope. Periscope uses beams of light reflected from the target. The light from that image is captured, and the passage of that light is actually Z-shaped. So it comes in at the top, comes through a series of lenses, and then is reflected at the bottom back to you. You probably imagine you're staring straight ahead. You're not. You're actually looking 30 feet in the air. Of course, in a submarine, you're below the waves. So this is a bit of you above the waves. It's as though your eyes were up there. That's your only connection with the surface and what's going on above it.
My name is Rose Issa. I'm a freelance curator and writer and producer of contemporary artwork from the Arab world and Iran. I discovered totally by chance Munir's work one day in the storage room of the Tehran Museum of Contemporary Art. I was really stunned by the beauty of the work, and some of the mirror works were full mirror and some others were only chalk with some very minimalist mirror works in it. In 1979, they confiscated all of Munir's houses, factories and work. So there are very few work of hers that are left of before 1979, when the year of the revolution in Iran, the Islamic revolution. So these are one of the few ones that survived it. It's, let's say, a large square of 140 by 140 centimeters. It's made of Islamic geometrical design, you know. They have this fantastic composition and intricate geometrics that that was a lot used in the Middle East. So variable, you know, in the morning when I come, I see the sun reflected in all the direction of the room. I find it completely different. Well, I mean, the room looks different because I have all these squares of sun in the parts of the room that never receive sun. Sun. All of these mosaic mirrors, like kaleidoscopic montage of mirrors in three dimensions. The sort of perfect shape of a square, like kaleidoscopic sun. And how squares go into square and how it develops into hexagons, sun. or pyramids. Like kaleidoscopic montage of mirrors. It's three-dimensional. And then she incorporates her own work. She does reverse glass painting. Those splashes that she cuts in small pieces. Splashes that she cuts in small pieces. It's like a Pollock type of work and coloring. It's a sort of like American technique applied to very old traditional Iranian architecture and craftsmanship.
So it is a very strange artwork that is variable, a bit moody, like the mood of a person. This work also reflects that personality, I think.
Welcome to the Mirror Maze at the London Dungeon.
It's time to face your fears as you enter the labyrinth of the lost. Go on, get lost.
I'm Adrian Fisher, and I've been designing mazes for over 30 years. Quite a few of these are mirror mazes. The whole game of creating any maze, whether it's a mirror maze or any other kind of maze, is to introduce deception and misdirection and misleading. And it works with people getting disorientated in hedge mazes or in a cornfield, in a corn maze. But in terms of total deception of all the senses all at once, the mirror maze is one of the finest ways of helping people get very, very lost. People find mirror mazes utterly fascinating. When they actually come into a mirror maze, they move forward with some trepidation. They are not quite sure if it's real. They wonder if they're going to bang their noses or not. So they start by moving a bit gingerly, and then with confidence they realise it's just huge fun, and they forget their inhibitions. And it's actually lovely, within about a minute or two, they're moving with a bit more confidence, but still carefully, and enjoying the various views. And the great thing is you never know what's going to happen, and you never know who you're going to meet. Essentially, we're standing in what we call a mirror maze cell. This is actually a triangular-shaped chamber, and it has two of the three sides happen to be mirrors, and one side is the arch we've entered by. And we have arches that reach over our head in all directions. We've got two cells here, so we can see about 12 reflections. It is a maze in the sense there is a path to be followed. There are sometimes dead ends. But most of the deceptions and the dead ends are actually impossible journeys through a sheet of glass.
It's very confusing. Very, very confusing.
You couldn't see whether there was the mirror there or not, so you kind of walked into it a bit.
Everyone's walking around like that, like zombies.
You said don't touch that.
My name's Jasmine. I'm 10 and a half years old.
My name's Joe. I'm 10 years old and I'm from Manchester.
When you look into a mirror, you don't just see yourself. Sometimes people can see the future.
And maybe the feelings, like, inside the head and all the ideas, maybe. And maybe it all fits together to what you want to be when you're older. If you've got a good imagination, or at least a bit of imagination.
And sometimes you, like, imagine, and you can see a different, whole different room that isn't yours behind you, and whole different people.
If you just look into the mirror and imagine that you wanted to be, like, a singer, you could just, like, sing and see how you look in the mirror, and if you think it suits, and so that'll be what's going to be in the future then. I would like a background of, like, maybe on a stage or something with lights and everything, because that's what singers sing on and stuff.
Mirrors are magic.
Mirrors are wonderful. Sometimes, like, I put like music radio or something, and then I play it and I put it down dead low, and then I just start singing and, you know, see if I'm really good for it, and I think I am. I've never really sung in a real voice in front of anybody, but I will, because in school, nearly every year, we have kind of like a big talent show where you like you can sing or show off your talent, so I might be singing.
And Jasmine hasn't been in one yet, have you?
No. Mirrors are magic, mirrors are wonderful. You can see yourself in a mirror.
Is there any problems with your tea? No, not that I can think of. Okay. I hope not. I'm sure they'll be fine.
My name's Gillian Dello, and I'm a dentist, and I've worked in my practice here in St Albans for 18 years now.
Right. Upper left, 8, sound. On the 8, I think. Does it say where, Vanessa? Is it just the occlusal?
Yeah.
That's still fine, but keep it as a watch.
Okay.
Right, 7's okay. 6. This is a problem when the mirror gets steamed up. 5, 3, 2.
It's quite difficult at the start to drill into somebody's tooth looking in the mirror at the same time, because you're not looking straight at the tooth, you're looking at the mirror image. So, I mean, I suppose it's only the same as when people look in the mirror to brush their teeth, or men often say when they're shaving. I think the boys in our class almost find it easier getting used to using a mirror, because they were so used to doing something quite technical in shaving, looking in the mirror. But for us girls, it was quite difficult to get used to it. But, of course, you don't start on patients. You start on models that slot into a sort of a head shape, and then gradually you build up cheeks and a tongue and so on, so that you're definitely not using your mirror for the first time on a real live patient.
Open wide.
When we were first working on patients, of course, you're so used using these models, and they're called phantom heads. And of course, they don't have saliva, and nor do they have any breath. So when you first put your mirror into a patient's mouth and they breathe, it steams up. And you think, oh, please stop doing that, because no matter, you put it in, and then they'll breathe again, it will steam up. So you quite quickly learn to, if you wipe the mirror on the inside of the person's cheek, it gets a film of saliva, and then it doesn't steam up quite so easily.
Thank you.
So all the expectations of an ordinary mirror, which is, you know, in a bathroom, you're cleaning your teeth and you see a face, one mirror, all those experiences really don't count for anything in a mirror maze, where all the mirrors are at different angles and you can often see reflections of the back of your own head a long way away. But there's also this whole hidden world, the fact that it's inside out, the fact that it's an impossible space, and yet your eyes tell you it can't be. It can't be, but it obviously is. And then your brain says, no, of course it can't be, because it's a reflection. But your eye just cannot shake that illusion away. And that's the fun of all illusions, where your eyes tell you one thing and your brain tries to rationalise and tries to tell you it can't be possible. So often the eye wins, which is great fun, and you act as if your eyes were telling the truth. There are quite a number of classic set pieces in a mirror maze. One of them is to put two parallel mirrors facing each other. And so you do get this impression of an infinite life, and a life. And it can either be absolutely parallel intentionally, and so you can just swing an arm forward and dozens of people to your left and to your right. Or you can swing a leg forward and back, and it looks like a line of chorus girls dancing at once. So that's quite fun. You can sometimes tilt them very slightly, and then you'll feel you're in a curved space. One very interesting effect is in the Longleat mirror maze, which has two different episodes. One is the wild forest, and the second is the ruined chapel. And if you're standing in the forest, it would seem you're 90% surrounded by trees and forest. You only have to step one step through into the chapel and turn back, and now it looks like 90% of it is surrounded by chapel, and the trees have almost completely disappeared. And so some of the imaginary spaces immediately to your left that had been a forest have now become a chapel. Nothing's moved except you, but the illusion is complete.
I think I have changed a bit because I used to look a bit more nice when I was little. I don't know why. I think it happened to everyone because, like, when you're little, you look there cute and everything, but when you get older, you don't look so much cute anymore.
I've got bigger and I've got smarter and I've got maturer as well. The face that I've got now is like a child's face, but when I grow older, it won't be like this. It would have changed.
I know, yeah, you'll probably start growing, like,
a bit.
Big. Yeah. When I'm really old, I'll probably have to put loads of makeup on so I don't show all my wrinkles and everything. I don't think I'll keep the hair long. I don't know, I might when I'm old, because sometimes it falls out when you get older. And I'll just be more kind and helpful when I get older. If you was all nasty and that, then you would kind of show it that you're nasty in your face. Because if you frown, I think it gives you wrinkles if you frown for too long. And I think that's what, like, nasty people do, frown most of the time.
Definitely mirrors and dentistry. The immediate thought is just the dentist using the mirror. But actually, patients always look in the mirror. I really do notice when I hand people the mirror that they do change their appearance a little bit because they pose. They'll suddenly turn their head, just cock their head to one side maybe, or just move in a way that wasn't how they were before I handed them the mirror. And they'll often touch their hair, especially the women, actually. And they really do take on a different persona than the one that I just looked at previously.
I do loads of weird faces, smiling and stuff. Sometimes I do this really weird thing, like, so I don't think I can do it, and I don't know. But sometimes I just, like, smile and see how I look, really. But sometimes I, like, stay there for ages just looking like that. And that's what I do sometimes, really.
The greatest use of the mirror in submarines, because never shaved, it's a great stress breaker. I learnt that trick from Admiral Woodward in the South Atlantic. He said, the one thing you've got to watch, Jeff, is your stress level. Stress has all sorts of strange effects, and one of them is to make you very single-minded and very narrow in your vision and your thought processes. I mean, that's a classic sign of post-combat stress, in fact. And the similar thing can happen to a submarine commanding officer in tense situations. He forgets what's going on around him almost. The best way to break it, which I did on a regular basis, was to go and look in the mirror. And that face staring back at you broke that intense self-concentration. The reality time was when you looked in the mirror and you suddenly realised that there you are, 5'6", missing your family. It was reflective in more ways than one.
You know, in Iran, there is a close link between mirrors, reflection, Sufism. Iranian, you know, is before being an Islamic country, it's also an old tradition of Zoroastrian country. It's a religion that is more than 2,500 years old, and where till now, even if the regimes tried to take it out, it never worked. Still, that is what. And in the Zoroastrian tradition, there are three sayings that you always have, is pandarinik, guftarinik, and kardarinik. It means you have to think nicely, you have to say nice things, and you have to act nicely, do good things, so that, you know, if you say something bad, also it reflects on you. It means you're not good. It's exactly what you find in the mirror, is that what you see in others is a reflection of yourself.
So I'm looking in the mirror now, and one thing that I have that other people don't have is a scar on my lip, because I've got a cleft lip. And so every time I look in the mirror, that's absolutely the first thing that I see. And my friends tell me it's absolutely not what they see, but it is definitely what I see, and I wish I didn't have that. And I look at my teeth too and wish that my teeth looked as nice as I can make other people's teeth look. Anyway, I've bleached them recently, so they look a bit whiter than they were, and that looks good. And the other thing I notice is that I have got big green eyes, and most people describing me would describe my eyes, because they're probably my best feature, my eyes. And I've got brown hair. And what else can I see? I've got quite a round face. And now I've got lines under my eyes as well that I didn't used to have, and lines on my forehead that I didn't used to have. So I wish I didn't have those anymore. But anyway, I'm not going to get Botox on that. I suppose I think it's okay what I look at, but I wish I didn't have that scar on my lip.
The idea of time is not in the mirror. The mirror is really the moment, the immediate moment. And how you face it, how you deal with it and with yourself is something that one has constantly to think of.
Mirror is kind of like the hero sometimes. Because if there's like someone nasty and they look into the mirror and they actually see what they're like and what they do, then maybe they'll stop it because they've just actually found out how it is and how other people feel about it.
There's a lot of bad people, and if you see a bad person, you look at them and you think, I do not want to be like that person.
It's like everyone's a mirror, really, because see, like, doctors and stuff, they will reflect what will happen. They'll kind of be reflecting, like, what could happen to you if you don't do something about it.
Well, there we are. You see, so often we use the word reflection as a metaphor, don't we? You know, that reflects the way I think, or that's a reflection of my character. The metaphor of the mirror is so much part of our culture that we sometimes don't even realise we're using it. And, of course, it is the ultimate feedback.
There are days you don't want to see the mirror because, you know, your hair and your face, and you start letting go sometimes. But if you have a mirror reminding you, you know, how you look and how you're improving or deteriorating, it's a dialogue between you and yourself. And this type of dialogue, I think, are important.
The one time we see our faces frequently is looking in a mirror. So our own image of ourselves is actually quite different to everyone else's image. Our own image is that of the face back to front. Everybody else in the world recognises us the right way around. And each one of us carries that in our daily lives. So every single person you look at thinks of themselves back to front. And yet we look at every other person we meet and they look the right way around.
You know, like when people say to you, you're dirty, your face is dirty, have a shower, and you look in the mirror, you can never see dirt on your own skin.
You can never actually see yourself in real life. You'll never be able to see what you really look like, even in the mirror.
It's like what your mum say. People say, like, you're beautiful, but not necessarily, not.
Yeah.
But your mum sees you through different eyes.
Mirror, Mirror was devised and produced by Nina Perry. It was a Falling Tree production, first broadcast on BBC Radio 4.
Two colorless, tasteless, odorless, invisible gases combined in just exactly the right way to give us this wonderful, life-giving liquid.
ReSound is a production of Chicago Public Radio and the Third Coast International Audio Festival. The program is hosted by Gwen Maxey, produced by Delaney Hall, and curated by Johanna Zorn and Julie Shapiro of the Third Coast Festival. Our production intern is Katie Mingle, and our festival intern is Ben Winter. Thanks to Megan Perry for the amazing recording of Swimming in Yukon that you heard at the beginning of the show. You can hear today's program at thirdcoastfestival.org, where you can also hear dozens of outstanding documentaries from around the world and subscribe to our podcast. Lead support for the Third Coast Festival is provided by the Richard H. Driehaus Foundation, with additional funding from the National Endowment for the Arts, American Airlines, and Chicago's Navy Pier. The Third Coast Festival is also supported by Argo Tea, on the web at argotea.com. Music for ReSound is provided by Reckless Records in Chicago. If you want to contact us, we would love to hear from you. Email us at resound at thirdcoastfestival.org. Resound returns next week with more radio that you can't hear anywhere else unless you live everywhere else.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.